Welcome to Stopgap Talks, your go-to podcast for expert insights into the marketing, digital, creative, and research recruitment landscape. With over 30 years of experience, our consultants are here to share the wisdom, strategies, and success stories that can transform your hiring or career journey. If you enjoy the episode, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review to help others find us. Now let's dive in to the latest episode of Stopgap Talks.
Hello there, I'm Kate Boston here at Stopgap. I'm a lead consultant and work on agency side roles, but also a few client side roles here and there. And with me is the lovely Christelle.
Good morning, Kate.
Morning.
I'm a senior resourcer with Stopgap and I work across sector with all the team.
Yes, we'd be lost without you.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. And I'd be nowhere without you either.
Yes, you have to resource across a whole range of sectors. So, yes, brilliant job. So we're going to talk this morning, aren't we, about the importance of the hiring process and really how candidates perceive a company through the hiring process that they put out there. From the very start of how candidates can research a company through to that onboarding process that they receive. So just some tips from the two of us about maybe how clients want to look at how they are perceived and received by potential employees. So the first thing we thought we would be talking about was just clients need to really make it easy for those candidates to research their company, to find out about who they are, what they do, where they are.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. It's really important to have, I guess, this kind of digital presence.
Yeah. So obviously they've got the website, they've got their career site within the website itself. And it's really about keeping things up to date. And we ourselves at Stopgap know how difficult that can be. You know, someone leaves, you don't get their profile updated, someone changes sector. It really needs to be kept on top of so that the information that candidates find there is relevant and very much up to date. Similarly with LinkedIn, it's just a go-to now, isn't it? So you look at individuals' profiles, but you also look at company profiles on LinkedIn. So make that active, make that engaging, give information and insights there on what makes the company unique. So as you say, digital, 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 and make sure someone's keeping on top of it.
Yes, I find that even if I've never heard of a company before, the first things that either myself and I assume the majority of the candidate out there would do is I would Google them, have a look at their website. And I recently worked on a search in a very niche market and the website was actually being redeveloped. So there was a note saying it was a work in progress. But as a candidate point of view, many decided to pull out of this process purely because it didn't generate that sense of trust and they were a little bit put off by it, I guess.
Yeah. Or maybe in that situation, the client really needs to try and compensate for that situation because they need to appreciate, okay, there's a lot of insight information candidates can't gather there. Therefore, we need to be providing some of that information, you know, so perhaps a bit over and above what they might put in a job description. So they need to be working hard to compensate for that lost information. Or is some of it available, again, on their LinkedIn profile? And it's not just the LinkedIn profiles of the companies themselves, is it? It's also the individuals that work at those companies. So if we as recruiters are working with companies, I will perhaps provide a job description, have a conversation with the candidate, but I would also send them some key profiles of people working at that company, their LinkedIn profiles. So that's something to be encouraged as well, I would say, that your guys at the company are keeping their LinkedIn up to date?
I think it's very important, especially when it comes down to interviews. I know that I spent a lot of time, and I think all of us at StopGap do that. We like to prep our candidate for an interview, and it's important that not only your position, but a little bit of the person that is behind the profile come through, because at the end of the day, what the candidates want to see is the people behind the CV or the profile,
is the job
personality,
title.
Because they want to know that they can work with that person.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So yes, the more insightful that website, that careers page. I mean, some companies are really going for it. They'll put video on there. They'll have testimonials from team members talking about, you know, why I like working at StopGap, let's say, or something. Some perhaps more successful than others, but the thought and the effort and the insights that they're trying to get across, that what makes them different, I think is great.
And I would actually just add that what I'm seeing on career site is a little bit of everything. And I think that what candidate really likes is some kind of, not uniformity, but consistency. I guess what it's through for one role probably is through about the others. So make sure that the company values are on there, that the benefit and the work environment, they, I mean, they are all things that can be replicated across a different position. So whether you're hiring for a marketer or you're hiring for an IT person, this value will still be the same. And I think it's important for the business to actually show that.
Yes, very good point. Very good point. You're right. Okay, so get yourselves out there so that people, candidates, can investigate what you're all about. And then what does the job description look like? I mean, we see a lot of job descriptions, don't we, in our role here at StopGap. And you get all sorts. You get very short ones, you get very long ones, you get, sometimes you don't get any, you just get a conversation. But let's assume that we have got a job description. What are the sorts of things that our top tips would include to have on your job description? I might start with a very simple one, but brand that job description, you know, get your company name on it, get your logo on it. Sometimes it's just a Word document that comes over that doesn't have any sense of ownership. So very simple, but believe it doesn't always happen. So I would start with that. And we were talking about this yesterday, weren't we, Christelle, how we think an organogram on the description can be really, really helpful. So who's doing what? Doesn't have to be within the company as a whole, but certainly within the team that this particular role will be a part of. A team organogram can be really, really great. It's quick. It's immediately obvious what's what and where this role will sit within that team. So we'd be all for those, wouldn't we?
Yes, I'm always so surprised. I've actually taken part in some briefings from clients where they are not willing to discuss the dynamic of the team, and I understand that there are some limitations to what they can share with us, and I think it's important to respect that. But equally, the candidate who will want to join would like to know who is on the team, whether they are a creative environment or whether their company ridden with processes. I think depending on their personality, it's really important that they know that in advance. Ideally, there will be a mix of both creative and process or operational candidate within the team so that it can function. But it's not always the case.
Yeah, Yeah, I think you're right. It's about setting the scene, isn't it? The reason for the role, the team that they'll be joining, who they're going to report to. And then obviously, and most briefs do have this, the role and the responsibilities of that particular role. Or you could say, you know, what does success look like in this role? What are going to be those key requirements that are needed in this role to make you a success? And I'd say try and make the job description just as specific to that role as you possibly can, because again, we can get job descriptions which have clearly just followed a template. The template doesn't always work for every role. It can be a bit too rigid in some instances. And then you'll get a lot of standard information going in there about the job in general or the company in general, but it's not really going to help with the nitty-gritty of that particular role.
I would agree. And I think it's very important to state the obvious. I think every role out there has got a degree of is exciting. The business is offering a position and they will want the candidate to participate, but will also give the candidate an opportunity for progression within the business.
Yeah.
I guess the honesty comes from the fact that sometimes and many times I see that there's a very mundane task that comes with that exciting role. And mm-hmm. I think it needs to be mentioned somewhere so that when the candidate is in place, it's not surprised by the environment and you save yourself some time further down the line. Otherwise, that person is very likely to not want to complete their probation period.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's totally right, isn't it? We're working with a company at the moment. It's quite a senior role, but it is by the nature of the company itself and the size of the company. Whilst it's senior playing a decent salary, they have emphasised how hands-on that role is, and people have to be willing and enjoy the hands-on aspect. And they've had their fingers burnt. They've had seniors taken on in the past. 9 months down the line, they're not happy because it's too hands-on. So absolutely, be honest in that job description. It's not just about all the shiny stuff. It's about the realities of that role as well, because there's no point hiding it, pretending, because as you say, it's just going to come and bite people on the bum, candidate and client, further down the line, and then no one's happy. So yes, warts and all, shall we say. but just make sure that brief is just relevant to that particular role. Don't add all the other stuff in that's very generic and not really going to help anybody. And also, as you said, yes, it's about what the role can offer for candidates. But it's also about what we offer you in return in terms of those soft benefits, the pension, the working from home, working in the office. It's very much about this is what we want from you and this is what we can give you. So it's a yin and yang. Honesty, clarity, transparency, focus. That's what we'd look for in a job description.
Yeah, and people are talking about soft skills sometimes in this context, and I think it's very important to be really specific about the skills that are required, evidently, but yeah. That goes without saying.
Yeah, and you can use tone of voice as well. So, you know, they're marketeers, so hopefully they can really represent the company through the tone and the language that they use in that job description. I'm working with a lovely change behaviour agency at the moment, and that job description is so true to them and their ethos and the types of people that they have working there. I was really, really impressed. So it's worth putting the effort into your job description, because I think sometimes it's just seen as a bit of a bind, but it's really important to help find the best candidates for that job. Right, we're making good headway here, Christelle. so candidates have done some research on the company. They really like the look of that company, so they're really engaged in what the opportunity is there. They've read the job description. Sounds great. Right up my alley. So they then apply for your role. And this is where you really need to keep the application process itself, our advice would be, relevant and time efficient for everybody involved, because whilst finding the right people for the company is really important, crucial aspect of success for the company, it can be quite time consuming. So let's keep it as efficient as possible. So some processes are really quite time consuming for candidates, and we'd say, you know, try not to make them jump through hoops. We have had some clients who will do the, you have to answer five questions on a video screen. There's nobody there. You just answer five questions and they look at how you came across and then they'll decide if you go forward. Terrifies some people. Certainly not something that you want creatives to be doing, which I've had in the past. I'm personally not a big fan of that process.
Yes, I would jump in here. I think it's really important for the hiring team to have a little bit of a think about what they want that process to look like before they start any interviewing or any conversation with any candidate. Generally speaking, if the company want to ensure some kind of cultural fit via some cognitive test or anything like that, to save everybody sometimes, just do them straight away. It will save you speaking with candidates that later on in the process you feel actually they're not really what the company is all about. Save yourself some time and save the candidate sometimes.
That's interesting, Christelle, because I did have a client, a small company, so cultural fit was very, very important for her. And she was chatting with candidates, then giving a task to candidates. And if that process went well, they were then given one of these online cognitive tests to do. And the results from that, she was just amazed and said, crikey, I'm not sure they are going to be right now, because I thought they were looking quite good so far. So she did then change her process to do those online tests first, because for her the fit with the team was so important. I don't know how many do. I'd be interested to know, but yeah, that's a good suggestion. Also, we've been finding that, you know, so much is done on the train now. Lots of people might have a commute of an hour, hour and a half, certainly with hybrid working where people are traveling further but fewer days for jobs and things. So it could be worth making your application process mobile friendly if people don't have their laptops with them whilst they're traveling. That can make for a speedier process and get people doing it quicker than they might have ordinarily done. And I think it's good to put an indication of applications to be received by X and all successful candidates will be notified by Y, just to manage the timing process.
And I see more and more businesses that are giving a time scale. So when they put the adverts or the role online, they mention that they'd like a candidate to start, for example, in January. So it is quite effective for the candidate to have that information, because it could give them I think if they want someone to start in January, they have planned this. And are they planning 5-6 interviews? I think some candidate will be put off by the number of interviews. Obviously, I guess it's all linked to the seniority of the opportunities. If we're looking to place, an account manager in an agency, the process is likely to be a little bit shorter than if we were hiring for a marketing director in a consumer or B2B environment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So seniority, you can appreciate, sometimes does take longer and there might be more processes for them to go through. Do you think actually that the interview process should be included on the job description? That's something we didn't talk about.
I see very few businesses that are actually including the processes in the job description.
Yeah.
As a resource and working across different industry, I would say that 9 out of 10 times we have details of the process from the moment we get a briefing from the client. And I think part of our job is to communicate it with the candidate so we can manage their expectations. I wouldn't say that clients want to be too specific about the processes on a role description, because if that were to change, and we know that sometimes it's inevitable, because you will have two candidates, for example, that are neck and neck, and you cannot decide between them. I think it's really important to be flexible and jump in with that last stage, because it will help everyone and the candidate itself. And it might be that further down the line, you will need that other person on another opportunity. So it's worth spending the time to get to know both of those candidates.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we talk about the interview process itself now? Because they can take very different formats, from my experience anyway, working with the candidates and the clients. They can be very different in length, style, formality. And certainly something that we at Stopgap did offer to our clients was some interview training, because some of the feedback we were getting from candidates was they didn't feel the interviewer was very prepared. They hadn't spent much time looking at the candidate's CV. And the questions were not particularly, they were very direct. They weren't particularly open. Or some interviewers are quite bad at talking a lot, and then they don't give the candidate a great chance to talk and put their skills forward. So then the interviewer at the end of the half hour chat doesn't actually know that much about them.
And it's so true, because if you work, I mean, at the moment we are working with a lot of smaller sized businesses, scale up, startup.
Yes.
So when you spoke to the CEOs of those businesses, they are very energetic. They have got tons of ideas. And sometimes it is the job of the candidate to actually run that interview and make sure that they present their skills, or they have time to actually say what they have to say. Because we all know that those guys are passionate and can talk about their business for hours.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's endearing, isn't it? But it's not going to mean that they get the best out of the candidate, or vice versa.
That's true.
So, yeah, perhaps he or she needs a few top tips there on their interviewing techniques. And also, you know, make sure that they are familiar with the candidate's CV, that they have looked at the candidate's LinkedIn profile. You wouldn't want the candidate rocking up and not having much insight into the company, or having some observations to share. So you really do need to be familiar with that CV, and be prepared with some of the questions that you might ask specifically about some of the topics that the candidates talk about on their CV. I think it's also interesting now, because obviously we're living in video times. You know, a few years ago, thanks before COVID, first stage interviews, you'd go into the office, you'd get a feel as a candidate, oh, great location. Wow, what an office. Or crikey, don't know if I'd want to be leaving here at 7 o'clock at night in the dark. so many first stage interviews, that's just not happening. So it's another reason why clients need to give the best impact and best interview they possibly can at first stage. And of the candidate as well, because there's none of this face-to-face sitting around a table together. The body language, perhaps, which could tell so much, is less apparent on Teams. So I think both parties need to be really presenting themselves as best they possibly can on video.
Yeah, I agree that that nowadays everything is, there's a lot of interviews that are happening on Teams, and usually businesses tend to leave the face-to-face meeting as maybe a last stage.
Yeah.
But I think for a candidate, I love businesses that are doing face-to-face in the first round, because they can check what their commute is going to be like. They can see the environment. And we all love a bright office with lots of lights. But it's not always the case. And if you're being offered a position in, let's say, a box room, I think it will change your perspective maybe in the role. So it's, again, honesty, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or it might be, you know, a huge open plan floor and it's just going to be too noisy for the way that you operate. Or so that, yeah, there's lots of ins and outs. And some of this might mean the questions come up at the interview stage. I think, you know, I think that's fair enough, because you can't see what you might, where you might be working until further down the line. And I think also some interviewers, they like to make the candidate slightly anxious. I mean, I always think you just want to be as welcoming and personable as possible to get the best out of the candidate that you're interviewing. So don't make them feel too much as though they're on trial.
I agree with that. I guess we operate in the world of marketing, so everyone's, as far as I am aware, tend to be really welcoming. But if you go for that maybe more commercial role, I understand you'd want to put the candidate through their paces to understand that they can actually work under that pressure. But it's a question of adjusting your methods to the environment or the role that you're looking to hire. And if there is different participant in the interviews, I totally agree. Make sure that everyone is trained or ready for that interview. If, for example, your business is looking to hire a senior marketing manager, a marketing director and a CEO will want to have different ways of handling that interview, or will want to have different information from that interview. So it's making sure that they both ask the same question so they can see what the candidate is answering, because sometimes everyone is really busy and those interviews might happen with the CEO at a different time as it happened with the marketing director. So they both have very different ideas and feel about a candidate.
The other thing I wanted to say, Christelle, was I have had some candidates come out and they said, oh, it was fabulous and he was brilliant, Kate. And yeah, he said he wants me to go around to the third stage of interview, and it's all feeling really, really fabadoo, and no questions, it's going through to the next stage. But things do change for one reason or another. So one of my suggestions to clients would be, just don't give too much away in the interview. You might love Jane or Jeff, but for whatever reason, something might change because of internal issues. So please don't say, this is all looking fab and we're going to be taking you through to the next stage, because it doesn't always happen. And then it's very, very disappointing for candidates. So,
yes,
not about,
it is
about,
very,
yeah.
From many candidates out there, it is a very difficult market. There's a lot of competition, and when they're in that last stages, they're really keen on securing that job offer. But we know job offer is one in, you know, one application out of 80 will get the job. So
yeah,
it is a really competitive world, and you don't want to for this candidate to have a really bad experience, because they are likely to never apply for any other role with a business, and you might actually need them further down the line.
Well, you're right. The interview process is PR for the company as well, isn't it? Because, yeah, if you have a rubbish experience, you're going to tell your mates about it. You're going to tell your colleagues about it. It doesn't do the company well. So keep it as professional as possible, to state the obvious. And I think that goes on to keeping that communication going post the interview itself, doesn't it? So again, candidates who are working with us, they will get the feedback via us, the consultants. But it's amazing how sometimes it can take a long time to get that feedback. So they can keep pestering us, and we will wait and speak to the clients, but at least they get to talk to us in the meantime. But if they've been working directly with that client and then it just goes shtum and they get nothing, I mean, that's just really, really hard. It might be that they're going to get feedback in 2 weeks, but 2 weeks can be a long time. And if you don't know that that's the sort of timing you're looking for, you'll be very inclined to just pester. So it's about managing that process with the candidates as well. So we should be giving feedback by X or by Y. And I know Claude and Tess were talking in one of the previous podcasts that we did about ghosting, candidates ghosting, but it can also be clients seeming to ghost as well. So just be clear, I would suggest, and ask about the timings to be expected.
Yes, I've worked with a really good client and with on several opportunities now, and they are at a stage in one of our processes where we have got a third stage being booked, and I think it's actually they have been so good at giving feedback to the candidate. They are not sure about what's happening next, and they're working it out, but they are telling the candidate. So everyone is actually happy and comfortable to remain in that process. If they are not, that candidate, I can assure you, if they're good, they will be gone tomorrow. They will be hooked by another company because the process has taken too long.
Yeah, and that's another thing, isn't it? At the interview stage, don't be afraid of asking the candidate where they are with other roles. Are they actively interviewing? Are they at application stage? And do bear that in mind, that if they're up for other roles, certainly at final stage, then they might need to keep the momentum going if at all possible. And don't be afraid to give some feedback. So if clients love you, they'll be quite happy to say, oh, yes, we liked X, Y, Z. We'd love to get you through to the second stage. But they can be a bit hesitant to say why it might be a no. And obviously, it's the way you say it. But I think we can all learn from why it might be a no as well, we as consultants and candidates themselves. So please do try to give some useful, insightful feedback as to why the candidate is going forward or why the candidate is not going forward.
Yes, and I have recently had a candidate. It was very much a rising star that we were presenting for a marketing director role, and she was absolutely passionate about the brand and the business, and a really connection with all the hiring member of the team. And they gave such a positive feedback. They gave us some actionable that made sure that in the next 6 months she can actually look at that in her current role.
Great.
So that whenever she's in the next process, she will not be faced with the same situation. And I think candidates learn from their experiences as much as us as a recruiter. Yeah. We need to have this information, evidently. But it is very important to get that feedback across.
Okay, and let's just round up with once that offer has been made. So let's assume there's two or three rounds of interview, Christelle. The offer is made and the offer is accepted. It's a done deal, but it doesn't mean that the communication should just stop there. Let's say the candidate doesn't start for another 3 months. I think it's to be encouraged that the clients keep, you know, not necessarily regular contact, but do keep in contact with that candidate. Contracts are signed, ask them if they've got any questions, let them know when they might be hearing from HR, just to set the scene on, we want to get your tech facilities set up. So just keep that conversation going, looking forward to having you on board. Again, to keep the values, the ethos of the company going and the enthusiasm there from the candidate.
Yes, absolutely. Some companies decide to create an email inbox for that person straight away and share communication with them. And I think it's good for them to have conversation with the rest of the team if they want to.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge topic. Yes, we can talk. So we've just touched on a few points there. But it's been lovely chatting. I've enjoyed it, Christelle.
So did I.
And I hope we've just covered just a few points and given some valuable insights to those who've been listening. So thank you, everybody, very much. And we'll be back soon with another podcast. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.